Sonoma County Salmon Coalition, Mr. Clamp.
Wow, here we are. I wanted to introduce the item to you. I've been involved with this effort for about the last year. It's a grassroots effort from landowners in the middle of Russian River watershed. I briefed the board on it very briefly a few months ago. Basically, landowners in the middle river, Russian River watershed wanting to address concerns over listed salmon and steelhead by addressing water supply and diversion issues, habitat enhancement issues, management practices for erosion control, riparian areas, those sorts of things. It's unique to me. I haven't seen anything like this in that it has the express involvement of NOAA Fisheries. They are right in there with it, providing contract support and agreeable to as essentially issuing the equivalent of an incidental take permit if the effort is successful. It also involves a host of state and local agencies. I think it has a good positive progress has been made and has a high likelihood of success. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mark Kelly and Carolyn Wasson to give you a presentation on the effort.
Thanks. Appreciate that very much. We will be brisk.
You can use this. If we'd been good hosts, or good, actually, I don't know what we are, but if we had been very attentive to your needs, we would have had wine and hors d'oeuvres at this hour as well. So sorry.
But we will be.
It's not too late.
Send out.
I'll run right out.
We will move briskly through this, but the Sonoma County Salmon Coalition was really created based on a exchange of letters that went on between the then acting administrator of NOAA Fisheries in Washington, D.C., William Bill Hogarth, and supervisors Tim Smith and Paul Kelly. Within 4 months after the listing of critical habitat for Chinook and Steelhead in September of 2005, with an understanding that given the uniqueness of our watershed as we'll go through it, particularly Alexander Dry Creek and Knights Valley, which comprise over 90% of all the grapes grown in Sonoma County, and given the fact that Russian River and Dry Creek supply water or the water supply system to almost 700,000 people, we could clearly see we had a unique opportunity on our hands. And as a result, we petitioned NIMS early on for aggressive help in trying to find a adequate solution for both agriculture and urban drinking water problems. And NIMS embraced our request enthusiastically. And thanks, with the help of the Sonoma County Water Agency, we were able to enter into a process, which Carolyn will explain in just a bit, that allowed us to do an in-depth, on-the-ground research of the most critical tributaries in the three sub-basins for both water quality and quantity and several other things we'll get into. That is the group that comprises the Salmon Coalition. It has grown. It was started out of whole cloth. Tim and Paul and Carolyn and myself got together and said, okay, the National Marine Fisheries Services had said yes. Area Administrator Dick Butler has said, let's go for it. So we called a meeting, and four people showed up. We laid out a general work plan for what we'd like to accomplish, and now we are about 30 months later. And those are the folks sitting at the table. The party missing up there is Trout Unlimited. We'll get in that in a little bit. It's all fantastic news. But they have been extremely, extremely involved in the process. But for them to be shown as a participant in a process like this is not an easy thing to get done. I would like for you to all, we won't read it, but that is what you're seeing up on top is the actual mission of the Salmon Coalition on page 2. It is important because it talks about conservation efforts and sustaining an economy. Conservation efforts coming first. We know that if we take care of the fisheries, our economy will be fine. If we don't take care of the fisheries, it really doesn't matter what we do because we will end up in litigation and we will lose. So everyone has accepted the fact, including the ag community, that we must deal with the fisheries and that will lead to a sustainable economy, as has the urban water using community. The watershed is a habitat for Chinook, Coho, and Steelhead, with Chinook and Steelhead listed in the fall of 05, Coho back in 1999. Coho is listed by both the state and the feds. The other two are listed by National Marine Fisheries Service only. The water supply is actually, is now is in well in excess of 600,000 people and irrigates 60,000 acres of vines, which also, and it also supports livestock and cattle, as well as dairy farming and row crops. The economy dependent on this system is $18 billion annually. Over half of that comes from the wine and grape industry. And the last fact is, if not obvious, we don't have any big state parks, we have no federal land, we have no county land. So in the areas we need to be able to get onto and work to try and make improvements, it requires basically 100% cooperation of private landowners. It's hard to read the names of those creeks, but the creeks that are named are the 13 creeks, or 15 creeks actually, that were given to us by the National Marine Fisheries Service and California Department of Fish and Game, that if we could get onto those lands and ascertain some habitat characteristics that we'll get to in a minute, NIMS would believe that those would be the indicator streams for all three sub-basins. To NIMS and DFG's credit, they've never moved the rock once. And I don't mean that facetiously. I've been doing this all my life. And it is not unusual for a regulatory process to change its mind halfway through. They have kept with the same habitat indicators and the same streams, and nothing has moved on us at all. It has caused us to have this unprecedented cooperation, because everybody feels like as we move, we've got the two primary regulatory agencies for fisheries moving with us and not moving vertical or parallel to us. Those are the six habitat indicators that DFG and National Marine Fisheries Service came up with back in late 2005. It would be the things we would need to be looking at on the tributaries that we would be examining. The only one of those that we have not done a good job on, and there'll be a process that will be explained in just a minute for how we're going to get after that, is water quantity. And that is because at the time we did the streams, it was too late in the year. And as you know, Napa and Sonoma County are the only two Mediterranean counties on the entire North Coast. And in the summertime, given the way we currently use water, there's not much water to look at. So we are not satisfied at all with the water quantity issues. But as I said, we'll explain that, and it's being dealt with pretty scientifically with a model from UC Berkeley and Adina Marylander. I want to say at the bottom, this is not a paid plug for Bob Clamp, but he has been involved with us for well over a year. Bob has told us several times, which included what he just said today, that to have NIMS and DFG initiate a process as opposed to come to the process is highly unusual. We were able to do that here. Bob has been an enormous asset to us, and as we'll explain a little bit later on, this includes AB 2121 and a watershed exemption approach to water rights. And in that manner, Bob is and will become increasingly important to our efforts. This will tell you exactly why it's so important. Vineyard production has expanded in the county over the last 20 years. Water has become increasingly sparse. We are a Mediterranean climate, and the water supply is for a lot of people, plus an enormous economic engine in the wine and grape industry. It's led to a backlog of over 200 requests in Sonoma County alone for appropriated water rights. And as you know from the AB 2121 guidelines, it would appear that their patience for approving one water right at a time without understanding cumulative effects is diminishing. And what we are proposing in the process that we're under, as Adina points out in that quote, is analytical tools are essential to making informed decisions that impact a watershed individually and cumulatively. So everything we're talking to you about today is a cumulative method for looking at water supply, both quantity and quality, for drinking water needs as well as agriculture, as well as a watershed exemption process allowed under AB 2121. The reason for this, and we won't go into lots of details, but if you look at the blue spikes as opposed to the red spikes or red dips, which showed impaired flow, It's very obvious that at the bottom, where Dina says increasing winter storage is a solution to meeting water demands for wine, grape production, and the pumping of water in months that many negatively impacted, some amount of populations. This has been embraced wholeheartedly by Trout Unlimited. We are now working aggressively with them to work with the state board to consider substantially increasing the speed at which we can permit off-water storage during the times of the year when we just simply have too much water, to save it for both the April-May time, which is generally when we see frost protection needed, which requires a lot of water, and later in the summer. So a big part of why we wanted to do a cumulative effects analysis is with Adina's model, we're going to be able to show more or less where we want to put reservoirs. And with that, Carolyn.
Okay, this is just a slide that shows what Adina's model is actually going to do. When we started working on this process, NIMS and DFG and Trout Unlimited, everybody was saying, yeah, this is great. We're going to have all these wonderful restoration and habitat enhancement projects that are going to do a lot for, you know, bank streams and maybe in-stream. But really one of the huge issues, the biggest issue, is water quantity. You know, how do we get at that issue? So Dr. Marinlander from Berkeley came to our group and said, I think I've got the solution. We have been working on a model that will help identify what the trade-offs are for fish, for ag, for the community in general, if we want to place reservoirs in specific points within an area. And we think by taking all of the information that's available at the state, all of the diversions, tributary flows, we can come up with a model that will show you if we placed a reservoir at point A, what will be the impairment to the stream. And that would be take into account all the diversions along that stream. So it's really a cumulative analysis of stream by stream, what a you know, what would be required and what the impairment would be like or not be like if we built reservoirs. And given that there's an excess winter flow, we think that storing some of that excess winter flow and using it at times when for irrigation needs for ag purposes is a huge part of our solution.
And the little dots you see there are just proposed places where we could actually put upstream storage. And they're not make-believe. I mean, it's actually where the model shows it would be effective. The next slide is a little bit important given some of the conversation here today. We're in the process now of waiting to receive from California Department of Fish and Game and the National Marine Fisheries Service best management practices, which is the one missing piece to the effort we've been under to date. We currently have the Code of Sustainable Farming, which is basically run by the Sonoma County Wine and Grape Commission, and we've got the Vineyard Ordinance for Sonoma County. The agriculture industry has not agreed to but has recognized that we probably need one set of comprehensive best management practices. Those would have been finished by now, except the chief biologist for NIMS working on it is kind of up to his eyeballs and trying to get the biological opinion for Warm Springs Dam done. But we think we'll see them in the next 30 days. They'll be vetted with the ag industry, and we're hoping within 45 days we have an agreement for what best management practices will be looking at cumulative effects. It probably will affect VESCO, and it probably will affect the Code of Sustainable Farming. But what we want to assure all of you is in Sonoma County and three sub-basins, we're in, our goal is to have one set of BMPs. And to the extent that there are other groups that want to come into the at least Alexander Dry Creek and Knights Valley and participate with us, that's great. But we're going to use the NIMS, DFG, agriculture negotiated BMPs, because that's the only way we'll be able to get a cumulative issue for water rights approvals as well as negotiations for an incidental take statement. So we're not going to be in the position to work with groups who want to come in with BMPs that are inconsistent with what NIMS and DFG have worked out with the agriculture industry. And it will include, obviously, all of those things and probably more.
Okay, this slide is really to give you an idea of all the pieces of the puzzle in terms of the comprehensive plan for protecting salmonids and also our water supply. We have now a completed draft of NIMS 2007 I guess it's a conservation plan for those three valleys, and in that they identify restoration and habitat enhancement projects. We also have identified existing regulations that seem to be working, at least to some, to a high degree. If you take a look there to the right, you will see there are two streams that are, the uplands are highly ag-intensive, but the water is running perfectly clear. And so we were really impressed with that, by the way. We were surprised when we went out there in the last few weeks. And then we're also going to be talking about incorporating in with that Aduna's water quantity model. I think what was amazing to us, and we have been so impressed, and we know we could not have done it without National Marine Fisheries Service, certainly could not have done it without the private property owners. They have been amazing. When we started this process, everybody was a little reluctant to even sit at the table together, but as time went on, you can see that the trust and some kind of partnership was definitely forged as 86 private landowners walked their land with NMFS and DFG and the RCD so that they could actually identify conservation actions that could occur there. So we were really thrilled.
There were nine property owners who said no. And out of the board, there's 52 projects, there's 52 projects and 109 actions that NMFS and DFG said that if they are done, will absolutely lead to conservation recovery of the species. So we're not guessing where projects should be done just by using any willing landowner who would like to come have a conversation. This next slide, we would like to offer as a reason why in the Russian River system we need to work with you as carefully as you'll work with us to determine what's actually causing impairment of the system. A couple of weeks ago, we took a field trip, if you will, with Carolyn and myself. I hope I don't mess this up. Diane Henry?
Henry.
Sorry about that. And Stephen Barkston, Holly Lumborg, Bob Clamp, and then four private landowners in the Russian River system to start to actually look at some of the impairment issues. And I want to share this with you. First, on the right-hand side, if you look at 2000, you'll see that if you look on the right-hand, is there a pointer here still?
Should be on the remote.
In front of you right there.
It's on the remote.
If you look right here, you can see there's a house, and that's the same house. That is the riparian zone in 2000. Basically 160 feet of pure riparian zone. This is in the summer of 2007. You can look at this cut. Over 100 feet of it is gone. We were out there 2 weeks ago. That riparian cut is now right down there. All that land right there is gone and is totally up against the bank with about a 10 to 12 foot cut. So all those trees, all the riparian habitat, all of it is gone. And the reason is no maintenance of the river channel. And what we've allowed is for rocks, gravel, arunda, and other rather from the standpoint of a biological perspective, useless debris to build up over here, and that bar right now is at the exact same height as the land over here. So what you'll see now is if we were out there, we're standing about right there. We're within 6 feet of the road. So give another winter or two, this will go just like this. There are two things that are important about that, and I want to be able to be very specific with you, is that while this is a real example, it is not an extreme example. This came from a Google Earth that we took, so we just have to show you where it is as of right now. This is a real picture from 2000, which we scanned. If you look at the total projected loss, if all we're doing is looking, board members, if all we're doing is looking specifically from Asti to the Alexander Bridge in the past 10 to 15 years, we estimate, and again, this is why we'd like to work together with you, because these are estimates, and we think we need to bring in some very solid biology on this. We estimate that about 40 to 50 acres of actual real riparian habitat has been lost and replaced by arunda, rocks, and gravel. And we don't have to describe the difference in the ecological values. But if we use some simple math based on some engineers we went to, that is roughly 16,000 tons of just sediment that's gone into the river in those locations, not counting the loss of the trees and the other riparian habitat that's been went in. And I'm not going to go to extremes here, but if you use an average dump truck on what a dump truck holds, the big ones, it's about 26,000 dump trucks worth of just the sediment, not counting the rest of the debris that's been dumped into the river by absolute lack of river management. And I guess the purpose that we're bringing this to you for is we think there's a lot of work to be done to better understand what's causing the Russian River to be impaired than just an automatic assumption that it's agricultural practices. The chart on the left is what you've got in front of you. If you look at the chart on the top, that those little spikes you're seeing are days in February when they were testing the electric turbines at Coyote Dam. And that big, huge spike you see was an enormous rainfall that we had. Then go down below, and you'll see that those little spikes that show the increase in turbidity match precisely with when they were testing the turbines at Coyote Dam. And the reason for that is the outflow at Coyote Dam is at the bottom. And if you've ever been up there in the summertime to Lake Mendocino, it is nothing but one big sludge hole. So what they're doing when they open that up is they're just dumping sediment into the system by the millions and millions of gallons. If you look at the one on the right and that huge spike, we've done some more research on this, and we think part of it is release and part of it is just rainfall. We just think it needs more work to understand this completely. But clearly there is a major, not just the lateral cuts we're seeing by our inability to manage the river system or unwillingness to manage the river system, we can also obviously see that the operation of Coyote Dam is having a major impact on the impairment of the Russian River system. Cheers.
Okay, this slide is just to basically, I think, memorialize the fact that the urban community has come to the table to work with the ag, and I don't need this, and the regulated community on these issues. We feel really fortunate that in Sonoma County we have a huge population base that is very, very concerned about protecting the environment and protecting its natural resources. So understanding that the problem down Dry Creek for fish purposes is that the water flows too fast at times. NIMS and DFG have recommended a pipeline that would actually allow for delivery of water to the urban areas, but also would allow for appropriate flows for fish to be constructed. That is going to be, $700 million project. And we have people, we have the urban community and the ratepayers in Sonoma County standing ready to do that. And then we also have a challenge in Alexander Valley in that 30% of our water supply, 33% of the water supply for urban uses comes down Alexander Valley, and a lot of supply for the ag producers also is derived from the river at that point, and that the flows are too low at times. So we feel like there's going to be an enormous amount of dollars spent on habitat restoration and enhancement in the river as well. So talking with the urban communities, they have said they are willing to put close to $1 billion on the table to move forward with habitat restoration enhancement projects that benefit fish and also people in Sonoma County. One of the two solutions we're looking at is the construction, as I said, of the pipeline down Warm Springs, down Dry Creek from Warm Springs Dam. You can see it, that accentuated blue line. The other thing that they were looking at, is several years ago, the Board of Public Utilities and the system was it? It's where all the jurisdictions have their water treatment, their sewage treatment facilities, constructed a pipeline for delivery of treated wastewater to the geysers for injection into steam beds. One of the things that we're talking about with the jurisdictions and the ag community is using some of that water as irrigation for ag. So that's the other thing that we're looking at exploring, and everybody's sitting at the table talking about that as a potential solution. The other thing that's going on is the various jurisdictions have all adopted, I will say, best management practices. They're more than that. They're guidelines that have to be adhered to in future construction that deal with water conservation. Also, they're also setting goals on retrofitting existing structures. And so they're coming to the table saying, what can we do, not only in terms of providing dollars for fish and working with the ag community to make sure they get their water, but what can we also do to make sure we conserve water? And those are just a few of the items, a very few of the items that they have already adopted.
If we look at this next slide, there's only one here that we'd ask you to take a look at, and that's the third one over. That's ES Fisheries Activities. In the last decade, through water and sewer rates, the various local governments that are the customers of the Sonoma County Water Agency have expended just slightly shy of $45 million on fisheries restoration. Tragically, no process like this was in place, and as these board members know very well, the days of being able to do things one at a time without adding one and one and one to come to three means you get credit for nothing. And so all this work has been spent without any cumulative effects analysis, and as a consequence, none of it counts toward recovery, not a dollar of it. What NIMS has agreed to do, along with CDFG, is if some of it was spent in Alexander Dry Creek and Knights Valley, and actually a few other places, Santa Rosa Creek, and we can now batch together projects with what's already been spent, they'll go back and relook at it again. The good news is that as of about 10 months ago, with an exchange of letters that occurred, we have a baseline in place. So as we continue to make additional fisheries improvements consistent with where the two regulatory agencies are, everything counts toward recovery. But this is just, I don't know what all communities spend, I don't know if it's this much or more, but it's an example of what happens if a community isn't united in its approach to how it wants to address water quality, water quantity, and the fisheries issue. And that's unfortunate. Next to last. I won't go through all of this, but I think what's important is we have broken down the barrier between agriculture and urban use. 2 days ago, the Water Advisory Committee, which is made up of all the cities that get water from the Sonoma County Water Agency, unanimously sent a letter to the State Water Board supporting agriculture's desire to have a batched approach to their water rights systems. A year ago, that would have been impossible. It was the old debate between it may be public trust water coming behind the two dams, but by God, we were here first, and if we'd known what you were going to do to us when you built Warm Springs Dam, we'd have never let you build it in the first place. And that's a war that's been going on for quite a long time. Those days are gone. Everybody, I'm not saying it'll be tense, but everybody is absolutely sitting at the table realizing that if we destroy the economy of agriculture, Sonoma County has no economy. We know that we have to have water to support our existing growth, existing population, not to speak of additional growth. And that lastly, if we don't take care of the fisheries, we don't have anything. The Dry Creek system supplies 35% of habitat for coho in the entire Russian River system is in Dry Creek. That's 70% of the water supply for 600 plus thousand people. The main stem of the Russian River is the only place in the Russian River system that Chinook use. As you all know, they're not a tributary fish. The quality of that system, it just stinks for Chinook right now. And that's, it's getting late, so you guys don't mind a little bit of candor here. But it's just the habitat is absolutely absurd. And we would like to work with you guys to go to both the Corps as well as the Sonoma County Water Agency, who we're not sure have kept their responsibility to manage the river system, either in Dry Creek or the Russian River. We can't do it by ourselves. NEMPS has identified at least half a dozen tributaries that are jammed with gravel, making it impossible for the steelhead, which are prime steelhead streams. And we would really just like to work with your staff to get past this last hurdle, which really is, can we work with the regional board and the farmers to go to the two primary agencies responsible for the river system and find a way to begin to manage it responsibly. We are not promoting, I want to be very clear, wholesale gouging of the river to for anybody's purposes for removal of gravel and rocks. But what we are saying is we have many places where if we don't do it, we're going to absolutely unnecessarily destroy private property. And what we have to remember in that cut you saw back there a few slides ago is all that riparian habitat may be gone. The landowner's still paying taxes on it forever. There is no tax break for riparian setbacks. There is if you start to lose the grapes. There's an economic loss, but that 140-foot loss of riparian is taxes you'll pay for as long as you owe money on the land. And that just isn't right.
Well, in the end, I guess what we wanted to say was we could have never begun this process without people like you who had decided that, you know what, there's a better way to get something done than just trying to regulate people, and that is to begin to figure out how we work with them. And this was really crucial for this effort since 90% of the lands were privately owned and there really was no federal nexus. So we just wanted to say thank you for the time today and thanks for the kind of leadership that we've been able to benefit from.
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, again, Bob has been fantastic, and we haven't had one regulatory or action agency sit at the table with us who has not sat there in good faith to want to move forward. And I think because the private owners plus all the jurisdictions are pulling together, it's maybe a chance to do something that's really valuable. And the economic base in Sonoma County, if you go all the way up the coastline, the next place you get to a county that has a $16 to $18 billion base is Multnomah County, Portland, Oregon. And the next city that's larger than the Santa Rosa greater area is Portland, Oregon. So we have a chance here to do something that we think is pretty unique.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Board member comments? All right.
Guys, I know it's late, but just because this board has been in some trouble and other issues with this term regulatory certainty, I hope everybody's being really careful about their expectations about what that word means. So I just don't want to make the same mistakes we've made in the past. I'm sure you aren't, but I just, you know, I don't know enough about this process to really tell that ESA has the ability to have safe harbors and whatnot, and the Water Code and the Clean Water Act don't operate the same way. So I hope, hopefully you guys, and I'm willing to meet about the legal stuff, so parties are clear about what that term means as it relates to this board.
And I think we have some understanding of that. For us, the reason this regulatory certainty is actually in there has to do with the water rights issues and incidental take statements under ESA and CESA.
Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you. And comment noted that you weren't here at the beginning of the day, but it's nice to end on this note
yes.
versus where we were at the beginning of the
yes.
day.
Yes. Backside was getting kind of hard.
So, all right. We've done the update. We have executive.